This is a dog whistle to the intelligence community and the FBI and the weaponized DOJ to basically go and suppress not only the votes of the Republican base, but also to make sure that they handcuff Trump because they're terrified that he's going to win unless they interfere overtly. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that away.
All right, welcome back to Financial Guys Podcast here on the Financial Guys Media Network. Mike Spiraza in studio today, a special guest on a return visit here, a former Trump campaign advisor, George Papadopoulos, joining us. George, I'm thanking myself for having you. Thanks for coming on with us. There we go.
Appreciate it, Mike. Looking forward to talking with you.
Big day yesterday. This is being recorded on Tuesday. This will air Thursday, but the Iowa caucus was Monday, January 15th. Trump pretty much dominated. I think that's the best way to say it. Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis kind of split a little bit. Vivek Ramaswamy was down in the bottom, under 10%, I believe. But Donald Trump, over 50%, that's what he was looking for. That's what he got. Your reaction to the Iowa caucus being heavily dominated by Donald Trump?
Yeah, it was a historic night, actually. It was probably the largest victory in the Iowa caucus in the last 40 years or so, according to reports. And, it wasn't really surprising. It's something that I predicted. If you look on my X account, 2 days ago, I thought it was going to be a landslide. And I thought that once Trump won the Iowa caucus, he was actually going to go on the rampage moving forward. He's going to stop being friendly with these various candidates. He's going to go after the establishment, and he's going to force them to coalesce around him, because I think the strategy of being too close or, flirting with potential VP picks before the Iowa caucus was a mistake. I think some of the candidates took that as a sign of weakness, especially with the various legal issues that are surrounding Trump. But the voters came out in record numbers. They came out in record support for the America First agenda. Trump obviously trounced his opponents. And my initial reaction, of course, was a massive victory for Trump, an even bigger loss for Vivek Ramaswamy. But DeSantis gets to fight another day.
So that was where I was going to go next. We'll get into Vivek at the very end, but I was going to go there next. This, Fox News was parroting this. A lot of the media companies were. The push for second place. I've never seen anything like it in sports or in politics, but this like, let's give a trophy for second place. This is great news. You're in second place. It's not great news when you're down 30 points or more. That's what I was a little confused. What is your reaction or thoughts on the race for second, I'll call it?
Well, second place is the first loser. That's what I was taught growing up in the city of I grew up in. And there's nothing to be proud of. I mean, yeah, you could pat yourself on the back. But after DeSantis spent, over $100 million to lose by 30 points and put his reputation at stake by jumping into the race at this moment instead of waiting until 2028, I don't think it did him any favors, and I think his career right now is threatened. I think the people in Florida, especially now that you saw Senator Rubio and Senator Scott obviously endorse Trump, and all these major congressmen in Florida endorse Trump, this whole concept of Make America Florida completely has dissipated and it's collapsed, because the Florida powerhouses are all backing the America First movement with Trump. So, yes, DeSantis placed second. Nikki Haley obviously placed third. But this was not a good night for DeSantis. And while he will fight another day, I do think his political career now is at threat of ending.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see. We'll get to his influencers in a minute, because they are very interesting. The whole group that he has behind him. You see a Chip Roy, politician backing him. It just feels like to me, and this is Nikki Haley as well. I think Nikki Haley though has taken the establishment candidate by the horns, and good for her. I don't think it's going to work. She's got the donors. She's got the establishment base, I think. But I keep going back to the MAGA base, George. I've said this to a lot of guests over the last couple months. The MAGA base is everything, right? And I don't mean that in a, arrogant way, but the MAGA base is everything. You literally cannot win without it. And Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis at times have gone after, and this is where I think Vivek did a very good campaign, even though it didn't work for him, but I think there was some ulterior motives there down the road. But I think those two candidates, Haley and DeSantis, keep, disrespecting the MAGA base, and it's costing them votes, and it's costing them an opportunity to ever even come close.
Yeah, look, Trump got over 75 million votes. That's not a base. That's half of the electorate. And if you want to call that electorate MAGA, then you're talking about the present and future of the Republican Party that has been completely redesigned since 2015. The idea that we're going to go back to endless wars, unfair trade, and allowing our industries to completely be decimated and outsourced to foreign governments the way they were between 9/11 and the Obama years and post-Obama are over. And yes, I know that you have people like the Koch brothers. Now, the Koch brothers, the main reason that they're funding these various candidates and actually against Trump, it's not because Trump is really this populist nationalist, but because he's against these unfair trade agreements. The whole concept of what the Koch brothers are for is actually outsourcing our industry to China. They're all about free trade, you know, all this type of stuff that, you know, has really just affected the middle class workers. So, Trump has the pulse of the nation, because the pulse of the nation today is MAGA. It's America first. They have seen what the country went through after 9/11, what the Obama years, and now, of course, Obama 3.0. They're sick of it. They're not going to go back. And that's why I think that this is a losing strategy to isolate the 75 million people, which are not a base, as I said, but half of the electorate.
So then we had Chris Christie dropped last week, George. We had Vivek drop immediately after the Iowa caucus was over, based on his showing. Asa Hutchinson dropped today, I saw as well. Not that we even thought he was still in the race. That was news to me today that he was still going, but he was. Who is next? Who do you think drops next? Do you think it's Haley? Do you think it's DeSantis? Do they drop at the same time? How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, because, you know, both have the donors behind them. They have a massive war chest, but those finances and that money's dwindling, right? They've spent so much money on a losing game against Trump that we'll see how much longer these donors decide that they want to bet on a dead horse, right? Because you have had rumors that some of DeSantis's major donors have actually begun to view him as an unviable candidate. They're likely going to start supporting Trump. And once that money dries out, you probably will see Haley and DeSantis drop out simultaneously, because I think they're sucking off the same coffers, if you will.
Do you see, before we go into the media reactions, because it was quite amazing last night, do you see a Haley and DeSantis dropping and supporting Donald Trump, though? Because I think Vivek did that, and very respectfully did that, to say, this guy's the answer. We all know it. We have to back him, and I appreciate that. Chris Christie did God knows what he did last week. He said looked like he was going to Haley. Then he badmouthed her for about 10 minutes. It's hard to keep up with these people. What do you see DeSantis or Haley doing if and when they do drop?
Yeah, first and foremost, I think Chris Christie's political future is done, right? I don't think we'll ever see him run for president again. I think that's completely over with. Vivek, yes, he did make the right move, of course, by dropping out. I think he should have even dropped out sooner, but he did the right move after that showing in Iowa, and he endorsed Trump, and Trump, of course, respected that. He said he ran a hell of a campaign, so all good. Hopefully they can mend ties, and there could be a potential for Vivek. I have questions about that, but we'll get into that later. Regarding DeSantis and Haley, I think DeSantis views this more as like a personal feud with Trump, and I just don't really think that when he drops out, he will back Trump. This is the one prediction I'm making right now. I think when DeSantis drops out, he will not be endorsing Trump. I think you're going to see some sort of donor speech that comes out saying we're going to live to fight another day. This isn't the end. We're just beginning. This wasn't the moment, but we're going to go back to Florida. We're going to, you know, he's going to do something like that. But Haley, I think, will drop out and endorse Trump, because I think her end game in this is not obviously to be president, but to have some sort of senior level cabinet position, which unfortunately, based on her showing and her rhetoric, she might have actually torpedoed her chances of even doing that, considering how close she was to the last Trump administration. So the point of what I'm saying is, the longer you stay in these races and the worse you show off and the worse your rhetoric goes against the guy who's likely going to be president, the worse your future forecast is for any political leadership role in America.
Well, that's what I was going to say next. I think she has said enough now about the MAGA base and about Donald Trump personally that I just don't see. And I'll be honest, I'm a big Trump guy. I would be very upset with Trump if he just openly said, oh, yeah, here you go. Here's a position. After all of what she said, you know, chaos ensues everywhere he is. Well, then why do you want to work for him, Nikki? If you're scared of chaos, why would you work for him? Which brings me, I just want to finish up with Vivek because you mentioned Vivek here. So, you know, he obviously, there was the picture that was out earlier this weekend about him with a group of people that said, save Trump, vote Vivek. That was a picture that came out. The Trump team, Laura Loomer was all over, but the Trump team was not happy about that. Donald Trump actually said he's not MAGA earlier this weekend. What are your thoughts? And you've been around political campaigns more than I do, but 2 days later, then he accepts the endorsement of Vivek. Is this all just how we debate and argue in a political war and then we make up afterwards? Is that all it is? It's just a bunch of hooey and a bunch of talking until it really comes down to it?
You know, in the summer of 2015, I really had an opportunity to work with about virtually any campaign I wanted, especially the establishment campaigns, because I worked, in a think tank in D.C. that was really connected to a lot of this old Republican Party stuff, the George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Reagan. And I made a strategic decision to work for Ben Carson and Trump when I could have worked for Rubio or Jeb or one of these people, because I saw the lining on the wall. I saw the future. I saw that those candidates simply did not have what it took to take America to the promised land, especially in the moment that we were in 2015, 2016, with the border situation, with ISIS, with China, similar issues to what we're facing today. Now, regarding Vivek, I believe that the reason he faltered the way he did, and this comes, people call him an unknown, right? And this is something I just talked about recently on X. He was actually one of the most artificially pumped up candidates I've noticed in recent history. They say that Trump had a lot of free media in 2016. Look at the media that Vivek had as a complete unknown in this past cycle. He was on ABC, CBS, 60 Minutes, Fox every day, yet he still could barely get over 4% of the electorate. I mean, Ben Carson, you could call him an unknown in 2016 when I worked for him. He had that one infamous prayer breakfast, but he still had 10 to 12% of the electorate backing him, and his endorsement of Trump changed everything. So I think, like I said, the best thing Vivek could have done was drop out the way he did, endorse Trump, hope to fight another day, and actually right now, stay off the airwaves, stay off radio, and focus on investing in two things, the people's issues and getting Trump reelected, because the biggest issue Vivek faced was, one, he didn't have the backing. He talked a lot, but we saw no history of him supporting his ideas. And two, a lot of people thought he was out to make a name for himself. That's not going to fly with the American people this cycle. People are struggling. They want a leader and somebody that's going to represent them in Washington, not themselves.
And I will say, I think he's taking number two, what you said there. He's going to be working with, he's in New Hampshire with Trump today. I agree with you. I think that's a big thing for him to back the president, get him reelected. And I'm sure there's a future for Vivek in American politics if he does all that.
I agree.
I want to go into media reactions. I have a couple clips that I'm going to play real quick. You'll be able to hear them. You won't see them. But the media went into total and utter panic. I saw every media station. Britt Hume last night was like, no, Nikki Haley still got a shot. They all got, people are not liking this. CNN and MSNBC, though, George, were the biggest panickers. No shock there. This first clip is Rachel Maddow. I'm sure you've already seen this, but Rachel Maddow just playing the narrative again that Trump will take over the country and will essentially be Nazi Germany here in America, which is actually comical right now to me, seeing that they are doing the exact same thing they're talking about, trying to jail a political opponent for 750 years, trying to take, they won't even play his speeches anymore because it's nasty rhetoric, they say. They are silencing. They are censoring. They are trying to jail political opponents, not just the president, but the January 6th people as well. We all know that story. They're doing what they're saying. I'll play this clip and let you comment.
I don't mean to be, again, too dark, as you said, on this, but it is not, if we are worried about the rise of authoritarianism in this country, we are worried about potential rise of fascism in this country. We're worried about our democracy falling to an authoritarian and potentially fascist form of government. The leader who is trying to do that is part of that equation. Mm-hmm. But people wanting that
Correct.
Is a much mm-hmm. bigger part mm-hmm. of that That's equation. Right. And the American electorate is made up of two major parties. One of those parties has been flirting with extremism on the ultra right for a very long time. They've brought them in a way that they haven't been central to Republican electoral politics ever before. And I know because I've been studying this. But once you have radicalized one major party so that those are the preferences of the people who adhere to your party, the leader is interchangeable. And
so I'm not going to play the full clip, George, but here's my question to you. Why is it that being America first, wanting a border, not loving crime in your cities and towns, not wanting your kids to die of fentanyl, right? Not loving high interest rates, not loving high taxes. Why is that extreme? Is it just January 6th? Is that the only reason they call us extremists?
Well, I think what she's talking about in this situation is that she's basically, this is a dog whistle to the intelligence community and the FBI and the weaponized DOJ to basically go and suppress not only the votes of the Republican base, but also to make sure that they handcuff Trump because they're terrified that he's going to win unless they interfere overtly. 2016 was all about subtle interference. Now it's overt, right? Now the handcuffs are off. The gloves are off, I should say. They're handcuffing a former president. They're presenting mugshots. He's in New York today fighting for his life, fighting for his business, because they know that they can't win unless this interference is ongoing. So that's what Rachel's talking all about. And regarding the way that she's demonizing the voters as extremists, she's demonizing them because these are people who are not beholden to the establishment, first and foremost, the Republican establishment, because they're America first. They want less government in their life. They want America to ascend to greatness and to have these endless wars stop. And because that's, as I said, they're not controllable. So just like Trump's not. And Trump and the America first voters represent freedom of thought, freedom of expression, everything that America was always supposed to represent. While on the other side, it's all about government control, suppression, identity politics, the government is your god, high taxes and dependency. That is what Rachel Maddow was talking about and the threat she views the party, the voters, and Trump as one package.
And I think what drives me nuts is, of course, they bring up the January 6th thing, right? That's like their claim to history now with all of MAGA, right? It's January 6th. When you look at, you mentioned earlier, 75 million voters for Donald Trump. Of that 75 million, there was maybe, I think they said 1.2 million in D.C. that day. Of the 1.2 million in D.C. that day, 1.1999 million stood around and were there. They weren't doing anything. Yes, there was a select few bad apples. Yes, there was also the people that went into the Capitol that treated it like a field trip. Like they were walking around, taking pictures, being escorted around, smiling. Like that doesn't scream extreme to me. You know what screams extreme to me? The people that burned down cities during the Summer of Love, right? The people that are still protesting that are pro-Hamas across our country. That's extreme to me, right? I mean, that's what's so crazy. Again, everything they say, George, everything about Donald Trump, they are in fact doing every day of the year, 24 hours a day.
Yeah, look, the Black Lives Matter Summer of Love that cost billions of dollars in damages and a lot of lives. I mean, people lost their lives, okay? I think there were two or three people that died during the January 6th events, and most of them or all of them were Trump supporters, right? So right. You have the Hamas situation in which they're trying to actually attack the White House just this past week. So these, yep. And along with Antifa, these are real homegrown extremist threats that the FBI is willfully turning a blind eye to for political purposes, while simultaneously earmarking white American male, Christian males as terrorists, while leaving a border open in the middle of a potential conflagration in the Middle East with Iran and the situation with Hamas. This is all just a perfect storm for a black swan event in the middle of this next election, which even Catherine Herridge on CBS News openly talked about. So this isn't conspiracy theory stuff at this point. So this is unfortunately the situation in which the Democrats have pushed the American people to. They're not actually prosecuting the real criminals. They're persecuting law-abiding Americans who simply don't want to be under the tutelage of the state, all of a sudden while supporting and emboldening enemies from within and abroad.
Now, George, I want to go to clip number two here, if we could. This is one of my favorites. Joy Reid, lady can't help herself. She has to race bait at all times. I don't know that she actually knows anything other than race baiting. Every show she's ever had, every big comment she's ever made has been white people dislike black people. And it's the most untrue thing in America, right? I don't care where you go. Yes. Are there racist people? Sure. There's racist people everywhere, both sides. Right. I mean, but it's not that every, you know, I think she, in her mind, it's like 99% of white people are racist, and it's just so factually inaccurate. This is her talking though about Nikki Haley and why Nikki Haley is suffering right now.
New Hampshire.
And I think to the point that you made, Steph, I mean, it's the elephant in the room. She's still a brown lady that's got to try to win in a party that is deeply anti-immigrant and which accepts the notion that you can say immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. She's getting, you know, birthered by Donald Trump. And I don't care how much the donor class likes her, which will ramp up a lot, the better she does in New Hampshire. So it's still a challenge. I don't see how she becomes the nominee of that party.
So I'm smirking here. First off, nobody says that. Right. Like nobody says anything she just said. Number one. Number two, I think if you, and I'm serious about this, if you polled, you know, a million Republican voters, I don't know that any of them know that she's not a Caucasian woman, George. I really don't know that. Like, unless you're really paying attention and following, you would have no idea about that.
Yeah. First and foremost, this so-called brown woman that she's talking about, that Joy Reid's characterizing as, was the governor of South Carolina and actually the ambassador to the United Nations under the Trump administration. So I don't think that, you know, and South Carolina is actually quite conservative, even when it comes to the Republican base. So to, you know, vote her in is one issue. Then you also had Governor Jindal, I forget how to pronounce his last name. He's also an Indian American in Louisiana. So this concept that, you know, brown people, forget African Americans, yeah, which already have a dominant role within the GOP, are somehow neglected or forgotten is complete nonsense. Secondly, I go around the country, I give talks around the country, and I've been doing it for years now. I have never, and I'm telling you directly to your viewer, I've never even met a white supremacist in my life, let alone on the campaign or whatever I'm doing, talking around this country or in my life growing up. So I don't know. Yes, there are racist people everywhere in every single country. You go to any country in the world, you'll find fringe elements which are just bad people. You know, you can't help certain bad elements within society. Is that the core of what the GOP is today? Is that what America First is? Absolutely not. And what you said is they're desperate. They have nothing else except identity politics. And the divide and conquer strategy of theirs is going to fail because the people see through the facts and some of the facts that I just described here right now.
And I think what drives me the most nuts about it is the people like Joy Reid, the Rachel Maddows, those people, they continue to push it so much that you're actually creating it. Like, that's the crazy part. You're pushing racial division so much, it's actually creating more racial division. Yeah. And they can't grasp that concept. And it breaks my heart because we're making Americans hate each other, and we don't. That's what drives me nuts. What they did to Trump, I tell family this all the time. The reason I'm a big Trump guy and I'm going to continue to vote for Donald Trump, you know, this year and whatever, is because I feel like they're doing to him what they would do to us. And that scares me. They're going after and creating this narrative that America over here hates America over there. And it's just not the case. It's unfair. And it's criminal, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, one of the worst presidents in modern history, Obama, forget the many issues that he had, was actually the divisive racial policies that he implemented within the United States. And just his overt rhetoric about, you know, white supremacy, all of this insanity about this white supremacist garbage that they talk about on MSNBC all really emanates from Obama, the Obama administration, the Trayvon Martin situation where this, he looks like my son. This happens to African-Americans all the time. No, it doesn't. Just look at statistics, America and the issue with African-Americans dying at the hands of police. It's not how it's characterized. America is not this divisive, racist country that they want you to believe it is. And the only way people will actually finally get the truth of that is I invite them to come to MAGA rallies. I invite them to go to a Trump rally. I invite them to actually come and go see Trump on the campaign trail, see who's actually there, see the love, the unity, black, white, brown, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, whatever. They're all there because that's what makes America great. It's the diversity, it's the inclusion, and the people who are all aiming and rowing in the same direction.
It's pretty simple. Real quick here on the furthering the attacks on this is the media on MAGA and even Ron DeSantis' supporters, George. I really can't believe it with some of them. They cannot take criticism. They cannot take reality. And I think that's actually hurting Ron DeSantis, right? I think you have these people that continue to push Ron DeSantis, yet they make him look worse on social media. And in the world of social media, that's kind of important, right? I look at Dave Rubin and Dana Loesch, me personally. I put one Twitter comment on one of their posts last night, like, losing's tough, isn't it? But they both blocked me. I'm like, are you a child? I mean, you can't take any criticism. First off, who looks at their ex comments at this point? I'm sure you get a million of them. You don't look at them all, right? I never look at all of mine. But they find these people like me and they just, we're going to block you. Bill Mitchell already did this to me at one point. Billy Mitchell, poor guy. The guy just can't catch a break. But I don't get it. I don't understand their strategy. I don't know why Ron doesn't see this as a problem. What are your thoughts on the DeSantis, I'll call it, media team?
Well, look, leadership starts at the top, right? And the buck stops with the president, or in this case, the candidate. So all of the underlings or the so-called influencers or the media people, they actually should be taking instruction from their boss, his or her boss, right? Yep. So the way I've actually seen some of these influencers conduct themselves, I mean, a lot of them have actually spewed racist stuff, bigoted stuff, sexist stuff, personal attacks against Trump supporters, Trump himself, his family, Trump so-called influencers themselves. And because so many people right now are on X, and how the mainstream media is actually being decentralized and losing its influence, and X is gaining momentum and influence, people see this stuff. And if you're calling yourself a major DeSantis influencer or surrogate, and you're talking the way they are, you're going to turn people off. So I think one of the biggest issues, and the New York Times even wrote this incredible article about that, how DeSantis lost the internet. And it's not because of him, but because of his influencers and their actions and rhetoric. So the leadership should have stopped them from, you know, once the going went tough, they should have had some talking points for them. It failed. They just went off the muck. And the result showcases, you know, that the people got sick of DeSantis.
I'm very much looking forward to watching these people all crawl back to Donald Trump, because that's going to be a sight to see, because they're going to have to at some point. I agree with you. I'm not saying he's going to accept it, but to watch it, it's going to be must-see TV. To finish up here, George, next stops, we obviously have New Hampshire, South Carolina, Super Tuesday coming up. What do you see? I asked this question last week, actually, to Vivek Ramaswamy's communications director. I'll ask you the same question. What do you see happening in these states, but where do you see potential DeSantis Haley dropping in this process? I don't think Haley goes before her home state, but I think at some point here in this road, it's got to end, right?
I think Haley drops out when she loses in South Carolina, and I think DeSantis will drop out probably a state after Haley does. I think Trump's going to end up winning these next two states. And like I said at the beginning of our conversation, the most important thing right now is actually coalescing around Trump, coalescing around the MAGA agenda, not having these divisive candidates or divisive smirks against Trump and the voters like we have seen. Have Vivek go on the campaign trail. Let him get his feet wet properly, right? Not simply on Fox News or on Bill Maher or on Tim Kass and all this stuff. Get your feet wet. Meet the people. Do the dirty work. Get your hands dirty. That's how people are going to respect you. They're not going to respect you just because they see you on Fox News. Trust me, it's not how it works. The American people, the American voters, MAGA wants a fighter. They want somebody who has blood in the game, has sweat in the game, and has skin in the game for them. So I think Vivek's going to do very well when he goes on the campaign trail. Like I said, Nikki's going to drop out after she loses South Carolina. DeSantis shortly thereafter. I think Nikki will endorse Trump. I don't think DeSantis will. I think DeSantis is going to go back to Florida with his tail between his legs. He's going to try and salvage his situation down there. But he's a wounded dog at this point. So he's isolated a lot of people, even in his home state. But, I don't think he's going to go down fighting. So that's my prediction for the next month or so.
pretty sad to see what DeSantis potentially did to his political career. And I agree with you. I think people are like, oh, he's still America's governor. I don't think so. When you're getting blown out in your own state by Donald Trump, I don't think you're America's anything anymore. Yeah. And not to say that that's not a shot at Donald Trump. Donald Trump's done a great job, and I think he's run a pretty good campaign. I agree with you, a few mistakes here and there, but he's run a pretty good campaign already. Here's my one fear before I open it up with the last thing about how you see 2024 playing out as a whole. But do you... I don't know how to word this, but do you see the problem with a Nikki Haley or a Ron DeSantis staying in, George? It's going to cost a lot of money from the Trump campaign, right? Like, to me, if you're serious about winning in 2024, let's not waste money, especially on campaigns. Not that it's going to be necessarily their campaign, but Trump's going to have to spend money to campaign against them. It's a waste. It's never happening. They're never winning. Do we have to start looking at that, too, the longer this goes?
Yeah, look, and unfortunately, it's not just their campaigns who are burning money over nonsense. And nonsense in their situation is simply being in this race when they know it's unwinnable. And just the metrics, it's not what I'm saying. It's what the metrics are showing. It's what the results are showing. I'm a results-oriented kind of person. Let the results speak for themselves. Iowa is the bellwether. A lot of what happens in Iowa, not all the time, but most of the time, what happens in Iowa will really portend what's going to happen in the future. And also, simultaneously with that, Trump is facing his legal issues, which are draining millions out of his coffers for all of those legal battles that he's facing. So what you're seeing is actually the entire GOP sucking itself empty for no reason whatsoever, except trying to stay above water. And that includes, unfortunately, Trump fighting these legal battles. So the best thing that they could really do right now, I mean, they're not going to do it now, but eventually drop out, send that money Trump's way, get him elected, hope that you could get a cabinet position, and fight another day in 2028. Some of these candidates are still young. DeSantis, unfortunately, I think his ego is too big. He's not going to allow himself to do it, and that's why I think his political career is going to be over after this.
Last thing. How do you see 2024 playing out? Obviously, Biden's already on the attack from the left on the MAGA agenda. He is the candidate over there, I think, at this point, unless there's a switcheroo coming down here by the convention. Robert Kennedy's running independent. You have Trump, looks like he's going to walk to the Republican candidacy here. But how do you see this playing out? Trump, Biden, Kennedy, and then also where do we go with Trump's legal battles here? Because those are far from over, it seems.
Yeah, I think I don't think the Dems are going to do a switcheroo. I think certainly the Democrats don't want Biden in office anymore. I think that's why so much of this information now is coming out in Congress. I think there's been a deal made with the GOP not to push impeachment at this critical moment because the Democrats themselves don't want him in there. Now, can they just throw in a Michelle Obama or a Gavin Newsom or an Oprah or a Dwayne Johnson by the convention? I mean, I think that's going to be even more destabilizing than the current situation. So I think it's going to be Trump-Biden. I think Biden, not only simply with the economy, because look, the GOP kind of made a mistake. Oh, just focus on the economy and we're going to win in a landslide during the last midterms. It didn't really happen that way. I mean, we barely have a majority in the House because they just focused on that. We have to really focus on the core of the corruption of Biden. And, you know, my wife's been working a lot on this, or some documentaries with the Ukraine stuff that he's been up to over there, which is fascinating. James Comer, Speaker Johnson, they need to hold hearings because by holding hearings and showing the American people how corrupt the Biden family really is, that I think is going to really turn the tide much more so than any issues on the economy or even potentially the border. So my prediction is Biden, Trump. Trump obviously wins the nomination. He's going to be the next president. And JFK Jr. is going to be, Robert Kennedy Jr., I should say, is going to be a spoiler, but not as impactful as many thought he would be.
And real quick, when you said that, you know, there's I'll call it a backdoor deal with the GOP and not to impeach Biden. Yeah. Does the left not want Biden to win? I mean, I know that sounds outrageous, but are they hoping that problem just goes away for Trump for 4 years? Well, is that what they're hoping
for? Well, think of it this way, right? If you're the Democrats and you've invested millions of dollars in countless human capital and TV hours in trying to redesign what your party stands for, right? A younger, extreme progressive, let's say not white dominated party. The antithesis to that is a person like Joe Biden, right? The old 80-year-old white guy, privileged, a family who's actually getting his son out of criminal acts that most minorities would have been sent to prison for life just for even 10% of that. So they're actually in a state of introspection where they're thinking, do we get him reelected and see our idea of what we want as a party to go back 20 years? Or do we lose this next election, hope these cases against Trump handcuff him the way Mueller and impeachment 1.0, 2.0, not allow him to enact his agenda, and then we win in 2028? I think they're hoping for the latter, quite frankly.
That's pretty wild. I mean, that's a crazy thing. I don't disagree with you. I mean, it sounds like it makes sense because he is as big of a dumpster fire as we've seen. I mean, you bring up Barack Obama, but Barack Obama at least could talk. Yep. I mean, this guy can barely even form sentences, and Barack could talk himself out of anything because he was just charming. I give it to him. I don't like the guy. I don't like what he did for the country, but he was a speaker, man. I mean, he did it in rallies. He did it in the presidency. So you got to give him that. Joe Biden, obviously not even close.
Yeah.
George, how do people find you and any books coming out, any movies, anything going on?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike. Many people can find me on X. I'm really active on there. I'm not into Instagram or any of that stuff. So I'm at GeorgePapa19. My book, it came out a couple of years ago. It's still available on Amazon. Deep State Target, How I Got Caught in the Crosshairs of the Plot to Bring Down President Trump. And right now, just staying very active and just keeping people educated during this campaign cycle. Obviously supporting candidate Trump, certainly for personal reasons, but also more importantly, because I think he's the only viable candidate and the only right choice for America. We're working on some very interesting documentary projects that you're going to be seeing some news about over the next coming weeks that are very fascinating. I think the people are going to love them. And just keeping very busy. And we're going to turn this country around as long as we all work as a collective team. And I think that's really what the theme of this entire conversation has been all about. Teamwork, unity, putting the party above ourselves, and then everything will be okay after that.
11 months to go, less than 11 months to go, so we got to get our act together, that's for sure. I'll have to have you on to talk about the documentary once the time is right. That sounds awesome. That is George Papadopoulos, former Trump campaign advisor. George, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Mike.
All right, folks, if you need us throughout the week and you think like us, 833-FIN-GUYS. We will be back next week with another interview here on the Financial Guys Media Network. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that away.